Hello and welcome to Animal Voices here on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM CFRO. Broadcasting from Wall Street in East Van on unsurrendered, unceded territories of the Coast Salish people. Today is Friday, April 10th, 2015. My name's Alyssa, and I'm joined by my friends and comrades, Jackie.
Hello.
Darren.
Hi.
Amir.
Hey.
And that's it. Thanks for joining us today. Today's a special day for Co-op Radio. It is officially membership renewal time here at the station, and we at Animal Voices are humbly asking you, our beloved listeners, to express your gratitude for the hard work we put into each show every week. Animal Voices has been on the air for over 10 years only because of members like you. Without member support, we wouldn't exist, and it really is up to people who appreciate us to keep us going and keep us on the air. And so we're asking you to call in today, 604-684-8494. Kelly will be answering the calls live in studio today if you are listening live. If you're listening on the podcast, go to coopradio.org, become a member for any amount, and state Animal Voices as your favorite show. We are going to kick things off here with a little bit of a look, or a listen rather, at what happened last week at the Greater Vancouver Zoo. So there was a protest there organized just by a collective of grassroots folks, and who decided that, you know, the zoo needs to be held accountable. And it was a really busy weekend for the zoo, and it was a really busy weekend for protesters. Here is a little listen with a bit of a song from Chumbawamba called Tearing Up Zoo.
Coming to the zoo when I was a kid, and I haven't been inside in a long time, but I remember animals being in small cages, and any of my memories going to zoos as a child or even as an adult, I probably went to a zoo about 8 years ago before I went vegan, and I felt so bad for the animals. You can see that they're in pain, you can see that they're alone, and I think it's just inhumane and we shouldn't be having them in captivity. It's not conservation, and I'm totally against it. So I'm really happy to be here with all these amazing people. There's, I don't know, I think there's like 100 people here. It's pretty awesome.
Shame on you.
And I don't believe that animals should be in captivity. And I researched this place, and I've read about how they've been charged with animal cruelty and how their accreditation was actually taken away by the Canadian Association of Zoos and Aquariums. And just reading all the information, the history on this place, I don't think it should be running. I think that they've had ideas to turn it into a sanctuary for native animals, and I think that's a much better idea.
Well, I hope that we can influence other people to think about it and just think about it, really think about it, because if you do, you know that it's not right.
Do you guys, have you gone to previous protests like this, or is this like...
This is my first protest.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't gone to any protests like this.
Vancouver Zoo! Shame on you!
Well, in principle, I don't agree with zoos. I don't agree with holding any sentient being in captivity against their will.
Why do you think it's important to protest or to come out to things like this?
Well, in general, I think anyone who still has hope for the world has some responsibility to try to improve it in whatever way possible. Part of that is getting your boots on the ground, showing your face, and saying, I stand for this cause.
Human freedom, animal rights!
Human freedom, animal rights!
All they
teach us is that it's okay to take animals out of their natural environment and use them for our pleasure. And if you look at what's wrong with the world at this point, it all starts there. It all starts with our relationship with nature, and this is a really horrible, horrible thing to teach our kids.
Why do you value protests and getting out? What drives you to show up?
Well, there's so few other avenues for activists to get their messages out. I mean, we have a corporate-controlled media, for the most part, yourself accepted, of course, that doesn't want this message out there because they make billions and billions of dollars off the backs of animals. So we have to resort to protests and things like that to get our message out, and hopefully protests will grow and we'll create a community that'll sort of create our own outlets to get this message out, and we'll get there eventually.
That was amazing. It really put me back into the protest on the weekend. It was an amazing time. As Alyssa mentioned earlier, it is our member drive week, so we are looking for support from our listeners. And for me personally, I've been here with Co-op Radio for about 6 months now, and working with Animal Voices for the most part. There's so much potential with our program, and with Co-op Radio's help, we can achieve greatness. But I really think that this greatness can't be achieved without you. Your donations and your support are what keep the programming on Co-op Radio alive. I mean, it's only been alive for 4 decades. It's not like that's a big deal or anything. That was sarcasm, by the way. But we would love for you to help us keep it alive for 4 more decades. And if you believe animal voices and having a platform to discuss animal rights is important, then the show can only go on with your support. We're still growing, and I think we can only go up in terms of our impact on this community of activists. And it really doesn't take a lot to donate to the show. Even just $5 from a group of people can make a huge difference. We spend more on things that aren't so crucial every day in our lives. I know for me personally, I've taken great pride in the fact that we've been able to give a medium for so many passionate members of this community to share their stories and their causes. And of course, sharing the stories of so many animals, both the good and the bad ones. We aren't called Animal Voices for no reason. Though the animals are not voiceless, we enjoy sharing stories of animals who are suffering or animals who have been rescued, and just animals in general. If you did want to help us grow and keep us alive, the easiest way to do so is probably just to hop on to cooperadio.org and find the donation link, or you can also call the station at 604-684-8494. That's 604-684-8494, and Kelly should be standing by to answer your calls if you did want to help us out. I don't know if you guys had anything to add to that.
Yeah, well, I wanted to say that actually each show has a responsibility to raise a certain amount. Mm-hmm. And just to put it out there, Animal Voices' responsibility is to raise $1,000 every year for the station. There's 2 member drives, so our goal for this member drive is $500.
Right.
And we're going to be talking about that on the next couple shows. And we have really special programming for you in honor of that drive. So, yeah, call in. Help us. We have to raise that amount. And we really, really, really appreciate your help. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and I think it was important what you said, too, is we bring to light voices that are often either suppressed or not even heard, you know, in mainstream media. So this is totally kind of the only outlet for some of these voices, and it's a great diversity of perspectives that you probably wouldn't get elsewhere. So
very true.
It's a really important show, and I hope that people choose to support it. All right, and you are listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 Vancouver's Co-op Radio, airing live on unceded Coast Salish territories. In the news this week, I'm sure most of the people in the greater Vancouver area have heard of the oil spill that happened just off English Bay. So there's a large pool of fuel leaking from a bulk carrier ship, and it has coated water and land in Vancouver's English Bay. The City of Vancouver said the spill was of bunker fuel and warned on social media that it's toxic and should not be touched. An emergency response team was called in Wednesday to deal with the spill on the bay that is surrounded by apartments, businesses, and Stanley Park, and of course, with many animals in its midst. So Vancouver's Marine Mammal Rescue Center said in a news release that it had deployed its rapid response team to ensure the protection of any fish, seabirds, and marine mammals that may be put at risk from the toxic spill. However, Greenpeace said that any oil spill is a disaster for marine life and those who depend on a healthy ecosystem, which I believe includes all of us. Fur Defenders also released a report, or more of a blog post earlier in the week, just saying some guidelines for people when they come across an animal that perhaps had been injured from the oil spill. They're recommending that you don't try to handle the animal, as you may actually cause them to go into distress and, you know, cause them to actually die from just being stressed out and not able to move properly due to the oil contamination. So they're recommending that you contact the Wildlife Rescue Association of BC, and their phone number is 604-526-7275. So if you see any animal covered in oil, contact Wildlife Rescue Association. And also, you know, this is a good reminder that we should try to, if anyone's interested in volunteering for this in the future, to try to get some training on how to help endangered wildlife, because, you know, we can only expect more of this to come, especially if the proposed, you know, pipelines in Kinder Morgan go through. Yeah.
Yeah, and I just kind of want to mention, too, that this is an issue with the government, and I think the federal government especially should be held accountable for this. So this is from, you know, a recent CBC article on the issue, and there are some important points that were identified, and one of them is that the federal government took more than 12 hours to notify the city of Vancouver about the spill, which is ridiculous in emergency situations like that. And secondly, I think everyone should also be aware that, you know, before the Harper government shut down the Coast Guard station at Kids Beach last year, there was actually a special oil spill response boat designed for this type of situation. But because the fundings were just completely cut, now the boat's like, you know, it has no crew, and as a result, there was no emergency response. So I think if there are, you know, upcoming actions, protests, you know, like who do we target for what appears to be an accidental situation like this, I think the government should be held accountable.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of the government and problems with Harper, I forgot to mention who we're having on the show today. We're going to be talking about Bill C-51 with a local concerned citizen who's trying to organize and educate people about what this bill means and how we can stop it. So just kind of tailing off that, like, I know, yeah, people are, more and more people are waking up to environmental issues and realizing the government isn't really protecting us, and how do we fight back? Well, we better know, you know, what the rules are. And yeah, looking forward to that interview coming up shortly.
And on another note, in Toronto, a bird flu outbreak on an Ontario turkey farm is caused by the same virus that has triggered outbreaks in British Columbia and 9 U.S. states since last year. The culprit is a highly pathogenic H5N2 virus. Japan, Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Uruguay have already imposed trade sanctions as a result of the Ontario outbreak, and more are likely to follow. 10 countries still have bans in place on turkey bodies from Canada because of the British Columbia outbreak, which began in December. Quarantines have been lifted on all the farms that were affected in that outbreak in the Fraser Valley, but while it appears to be over, Canada has not yet been declared bird flu free and won't be until the Ontario outbreak is extinguished. Updated numbers for that operation released by CFIA indicate that more than 10,000 birds have died so far. And the remaining 34,000 turkeys will apparently, in air quotes, be humanely euthanized in an effort to arrest spread of the virus. So, yeah, this is a sad case for, of course, the birds, as well as, you know, all the people that are likely to suffer as well because of this.
Yeah, it's really tragic. To balance that out with a couple of good news, the government of Thailand has recently seized all the tigers from the Krul Tiger Temple, where tourists often go visit and they, you know, take photos and selfies and with the tigers, which is basically just a form of exploitation. And so, yeah, so the government shut that down. Hopefully they will bring all the tigers to a sanctuary. Like, we're not sure, you know, what's going to happen after to these tigers. So hope things work out for them. Another piece of good news, New Zealand just banned all animal testing for cosmetics. So animal rights activists have been declaring that a victory. And yeah, hopefully, you know, when a country does that, usually it has impacts on other countries as well. And hopefully this will generate a trend of move towards non-animal testing.
Let's just quickly, before we get to our first interview, let's check in about a couple things that are upcoming around the Vancouver area.
Coming up this weekend on Saturday, there is the Chicken Vigil taking place at Hallmark Poultry Processing, which is on the northeast corner of Commercial and Hastings. So join activists and bear witness and show solidarity, love, and empathy to the thousands of chickens killed each day at Hallmark Slaughterhouse. Signs will be provided, but feel free to make your own. And like once again, that is Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. We've all been there. What, any thoughts people want to share about the chicken vigils?
They want it to be just a big gray, you know, anonymous building, and that, you know, people don't know what's going on, but like, it's so important to just bring awareness.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I also find it actually to be a fairly empowering experience in terms of doing outreach, just because, with a huge group of people wearing signs and with, like a lot of cars driving by, there's tons of exposure. So, that's, yeah, definitely a good place to do outreach.
Great. And also an event that myself and another activist, Bailey, I'll give you a shout out, have been working hard on is going to be happening next Saturday, and that is the Queer Animal Talent Show. This event is basically an effort to bridge the queer and animal activist communities together, and I think it's going to be awesome and doing a great job of that. We have a lineup of about 10 talents of various types. We have some people singing, instrumentals, some poetry readings, and there's a contemporary dance performance which just got booked, which is going to be amazing. So it's a really exciting event. Once again, that is Saturday the 18th and from 7 to 10 p.m. at Heartwood Cafe. And I just want to also mention that in the past week, thanks to some outreach by some well-known queer groups, our list has gotten quite full for events. So just to make sure you have a spot, try to arrive early, because Heartwood's capacity is apparently 70 people.
And now with us on the phone, we have Bowen Ma. So Bowen is just a concerned citizen based in Vancouver, inspired to action, trying to educate people and organize people against Bill C-51, the federal anti-terrorism bill that people have probably been hearing about for the last couple months. Bowen has a background in engineering and really has a lot to say on this issue. So I wanted to have her on the show just because it's important that we know, if we're speaking up for animals and speaking up for the environment and asserting our rights and, you know, doing things, well, that are anti-corporate and anti-government. I mean, we need to know what's going on federally and in the with the government. So we're really happy to have Bowen on. Thanks for joining us.
Hello.
Hey. So tell us about Bill C-51 in general. What is it and why should we care?
Bill C-51 is a federal bill currently being discussed in the House of Commons. It's an omnibus bill, which means it's actually multiple bills grouped into one. So it's titled the Anti-Terrorism Act, but this is actually completely misleading. In a nutshell, what it's really about is controlling the population's dissent under the guise of stopping terrorism. And we've seen this in other countries. We've seen this in the Patriot Act down in the States, for instance. And this isn't a new tactic that governments have taken in order to control public dissent. But this is probably one of the most extreme forms that we've seen here in Canada.
What do activists, like grassroots activists, most need to know about the bill?
What activists need to know about this bill is that it's a threat to their basic democratic rights to opinion and dissent against the status quo. And usually I say that every champion has its cause and every cause has its champions. That is, that nobody can fight for everything. But Bill C-51 is one of those causes that really actually is quite different, because it has the ability to stifle all causes. some of the provisions in this bill that allows for the government to do this are as follows. And again, this is an omnibus bill. So, I mean, it's a 62-page bill. We're trying to cover it in, you know, a few minutes. For instance, so Bill C-51 is a bill that's used to target what they call, quote, activities that undermine the security of Canada, unquote. And they include terrorism in this category, but they actually expand the definition to include, for instance, and these are actually phrases out of the bill, quote, interference with the economic or financial stability of Canada. That's one. The other is changing or unduly influencing a government in Canada by unlawful means. That's another. Or interference with critical infrastructure. And then they also include any activity that undermines the security of another state, unquote. Now, these are extremely broad definitions of what might be considered a activity that undermines the security of Canada. This could, experts have said that this could realistically be used to encapsulate, for instance, protests that blockade roads or bridges, or pipeline protesters that blockade the Kinder Morgan pipeline going in. Those could be activities that might be considered to be interference with the economic or financial stability of Canada. So because the definition is so broad, a lot of these provisions in this bill can actually basically be used against pretty much anybody that has something dissenting to say about the government or might want to do something about that. So that's just one of the scary provisions of this bill.
Now, I hear you talking about Canada and you know, the government wanting to protect itself. What about corporations? Like in the U.S., for example, they have the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act. Like if you harm the proceeds, the money of animal exploitation industries, and you're considered a terrorist. Is there stuff like that in there too, like corporate protections?
Now, it's funny that you say that. Now, I have to preface this as saying I am not an expert. I'm just a concerned citizen, really, that's been really obsessed with this bill in the last couple of months. Yeah. I'm not a lawyer. But this bill itself does not necessarily contain corporate protections, but you also can't see this bill, you can't read this bill on its own. There have been a lot of legislations that have come up lately and a lot of treaties that when you look at them together are pretty scary. Like, for instance, the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and NAFTA, these are free trade agreements that actually are more like investors' rights agreements. So what they do is they actually allow for corporations in other countries that we have these treaties with to sue the government of Canada if they feel that we are impeding their ability to gain profits. So, for instance, I believe there's actually a case where UPS sued the government of Canada for, I can't remember, it was like $67 million or something like that, because they felt that they could not compete with Canada Post, and therefore they were losing profits. And free trade agreements like that actually allow for corporations to do this. Now, if Canadian citizens all knew a lot more about what was going on here, and there have been hundreds of millions of dollars of Canadian taxpayer money paid out to corporations in other countries under these free trade agreements. Like, imagine the uprising that might happen. And yet, if you criminalize that sort of uprising, then you're able to sort of control that a little better. So, I mean, if you look at all of these different legislations together, it paints a pretty scary picture.
So, Bowen, I have a question for you here. A lot of times, you know, like you said, it's obviously, I'm not trying to downplay the impacts of this legislation, but a lot of times in the past when there has been resistance against these trade agreements and whatnot and against corporations, we already see a lot of state repression against activists, right? So yeah. This is just a perspective from an activist from Eastern Canada, Alex Hundert, and this is from a Vice article, and he says, you know, this is a quote from the article from him. He says, we're doing this thing yet again where we react against things long after the groundwork has been laid. And he says, all of these new powers already exist within policing agencies. The preemptive disruption tactics are already happening. The definition of entire communities or social movements as pseudo-terrorists or terrorists is already happening. And then he concludes by saying, we already live in a world that people are afraid C-51 is going to create. And he kind of sees that, like, Bill C-51, even though it hasn't been legitimately passed, but, you know, the groundwork is already there, the structure is already there, and we already live in that world where it actually completely. Is a law. So I guess given that perspective, from your point of view advocating against Bill C-51, why is it so important to still fight this bill, even though a lot of people kind of already recognize that this is the reality of the world we're living in right now?
I absolutely agree that this is the reality of the world that we're living in right now. However, it can always get worse. And I think that that's what we need to be aware of, that I think that a lot of Canadians don't realize how quickly a country can change on them. We all think that we're well protected because Canada's wonderful and, you know, the Western world, there's this perception that we're somehow safe and free forever. The groundwork definitely has been laid, but having provisions like this bill introduces become actually part of our criminal code is a huge step. And what this does also is it really, it takes away so much more fight in us. I'm not sure how to explain it clearly, but basically, just because something happens doesn't mean that it's right. And if there is an ability to bring up opposition along the way, I think that we need to take advantage of it. The interesting thing about this bill is that it's really uniting people, and it's concrete evidence of what the government has been trying to do. A lot of the groundwork, as you say, that's been laid, it's sort of hard to pinpoint where it came, when it came into effect, and how it's impacting us. With the legislation like this, it's very clear, and it's something that we can rally to stop specifically. And if we are able to stop it, then it also shows our government that we're not willing to just sort of roll over and let them bring this into law. I'm not sure if that made any sense.
Yeah, it is. I like what you said about how the bill is uniting a lot of people, and perhaps it serves more as a wake-up call to fight against, you know, police and state repression more than anything else that has been going on for the past little while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm definitely getting a sense of, you know, why activists should care about this. What about just law-abiding citizens who maybe go to the occasional march, or, you know, who don't really step out of line much? Maybe they think they shouldn't be concerned about this. It's just for extremists.
Now, that's interesting that you say that, because first off, most activists are law-abiding as well. And what's needed for someone to go from what you might say, you know, their average citizen to become an activist, or how that ends, is basically they have to realize that they care about something enough to speak out. And all of a sudden, you have entered the range of where this bill could impact you. Caring about something and speaking out should not be something unusual. Secondly, the information sharing provisions of this bill don't actually just apply if you're a criminal or violent. They actually allow for, it's difficult because it's such a long bill, and I'm trying to be succinct about it. But let's take preventative arrest for instance. Preventative arrest is basically arrest without cause, and we currently have this. It allows for law enforcement to arrest somebody if they believe that they, quote, will, unquote, commit a terrorist act. And remember that the term terrorism is extremely political and self-serving. It's used by the government to try to create an us versus them mentality. There's no real definition of what makes somebody a terrorist and someone else not. So what this bill does is it actually further lowers the threshold for arrest without cause. So they can arrest you if they suspect you, quote, may, unquote, commit a terrorist act. That really opens things up to a lot of interpretation. This basically means that before you've done anything violent, before you've done any criminal act, without evidence, without trial, without charge, they can actually detain you under these provisions just because someone thinks you might or you could or you may commit a terrorist act. That opens the door for racial profiling. It opens the door for someone to use that against, not necessarily anyone, but law enforcement to use that against a person for out of convenience or spite. Or it, what it basically means is that this could be, this can impact people who are far from violence, who are far from criminal, who have nothing to do with anything that they think might be considered terrorism. And so, anyway, that's an example of why a quote-unquote law-abiding citizen might be concerned. And remember that, well, I think everyone really needs to care about this because it's a blatant infringement on our Charter of Rights. All Canadians should care about that. Bush and Harper often say that the terrorists hate us for our freedoms and they want to take our rights and freedoms away. Well, no one can take away our freedoms and rights more effectively than our own government. We do this to ourselves. And these are the types of things that all Canadians and all people in Canada need to watch out for.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So now I'm ready to hear, what can we do to fight this bill?
So there are a number of things. One is education. Education is key. When this bill first came out, there was a poll done by Angus Reid that suggested that 82% of Canadians actually supported this bill. And further down in the poll, it showed that 82% of Canadians didn't actually know what was in the bill. Now, more recent polls have shown that a vast majority of Canadians do not like what's in the bill or aren't supportive of it. This comes with education. So number one, educate people. Number two, contact your MPs. I don't think our members of parliament have ever heard so much correspondence on a single legislation, maybe ever. There are letter writing campaigns. You can call your MP. The silver lining to all of this is that this year is election year, and that's the biggest power as voters that we have to influence our government. Right now, the Conservative Party and the Liberal Party are supporting the bill, and that makes it extremely difficult for it to fail in Parliament unless members of Parliament start to realize that they're risking re-election by supporting this bill. So being very vocal with your member of Parliament is very important. Finally, there is a Canada-wide rally effort coming up on April 18th, and there are currently 23 different cities participating in this. This is a very grassroots movement, not being run by any particular organization. It's very decentralized. In Vancouver, the rally is at the Vancouver Art Gallery, April 18th at 1 p.m. There will be speakers. We actually have a musician, Zach Gray from the Zolas, if people are aware of him. We'll be opening the rally as well. We invite all people of all political backgrounds, of all causes, to come out and show opposition to this bill.
Excellent. Yeah, we definitely plan to be there. All the animal activist friends that I have, we need to all show up. Mm-hmm. I really do appreciate that this is unifying people and that it's a truly grassroots movement. I really appreciate you joining us. Is there any just final message that you want to get across?
No, I mean, really, it's just a matter of waking people up. This is, you're right, that this isn't the first time that Canada has tried to control dissent. It's already been a very big problem with Indigenous groups. The Canadian government has been controlling what they've been doing and saying for decades. Now they're extending it to the rest of Canada, and I really hope that we can learn from our past and recognize when something's gone far, way too far.
Thank you. Yeah. And I also wanted to mention there's an Animal Voices did an interview with Will Potter last year. He's the author of Green is the New Red and a journalist who talks about animal rights and environmental activism as terrorism, especially in the U.S., but it's definitely coming up here more. So check that out. And Bowen Ma, thank you for joining us on Animal Voices today.
Thank you.
Now, this is a song by a local artist named Sean J. Stevens. It's a song called Ecoterrorism, from his album Stop Eating Animals Version 2. You can check that out on Bandcamp.
Reserved for the one who destroys such a plant,
such a plant which worse
to destroy a planet. A pair of wire cutters, a cage in a laboratory, a siren and an exchange, one captive for another, for someone must be caged. Incarcerate to retribute, and the point is all but lost. To plant you must first uproot. The finer points of salvation, a pair of wire cutters, a cage in a laboratory, a siren and an exchange, one captive for another, for someone must be caged. A pair of wire cutters, a cage in a laboratory, a siren and an exchange, one captive for another, for someone must be caged. Why must someone be caged? Why must someone be caged? Why must someone be caged?
On the line, we have a Jordan Reichert. Located in Victoria, we are excited to hear that you are starting the Vancouver Island Vegan Association. I want to hear more about that and what inspired you to start it, how it came to be, and what kind of activism and work you're doing in Victoria. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on the show. You know, really, it's a project that's been in our minds for a while. Corey Kabilski and myself have been working, as you know, as well with the Critical Cat in Victoria, doing a lot of vegan outreach, vegan events, and doing animal activism and advocacy as well through that organization. We decided that, you know, the Critical Cat wasn't too recognizable for people when they looked for veganism on the island or in Victoria, and so we thought it was time to make an organization that was more specific and also more dedicated just to the vegan aspect of the work that we were doing in the community, and that was something that the community, we felt, really would benefit from overall. So that was kind of the motivation behind it originally. And, you know, otherwise it was just that, you know, there certainly had been vegan organizations on Vancouver Island and Victoria prior to Vancouver Island Vegan Association, but we just felt that the scene needed a bit of fresh air. Needed something new to happen in it, and we saw an opportunity, and so we got in touch with the people who started the original Vancouver Island Vegetarian Association, and we talked to them a bit about, you know, reinvigorating the organization because it had been inactive for a couple of years, and they said they thought it was a great idea. They said, you know, they had stopped organizing things for it because of a lot of volunteers at the time. But they were happy to, you know, hand over the reins to people who were interested in, you know, putting in the time and energy. And, you know, they were very welcoming as well to the idea of it transitioning over from the Vegetarian Association to a Vegan Association. Because, I mean, the Vegetarian Association at the time, it was started about 30 years ago when veganism wasn't nearly as palatable to the general public. Or to people in general, they weren't really as sure about what really meant, even though all the events and all the food at the events and such were vegan, and a lot of the members were vegan. But still, vegetarianism at the time was much more mainstream, and now that we see veganism is much more prolific as an idea and as a practice in society, you know, veganism just made sense to us because it is a mainstream movement, and we want to make it even more mainstream. We want to, you know, make people feel comfortable with it. We want to welcome people to it. And that's a lot, and that's a big focus of a lot of the programs that we're going to be having is, you know, encouraging people to engage with veganism for the first time at a positive level that, you know, really is not about guilting or shaming or judging them, but really about welcoming them and about it being inclusive and, you know, about the health of the matter as well.
Awesome. Yeah. So I'm wondering, are you keeping the Critical Cat alive? Because I know you were doing a lot of activism with that, for example, like anti-fur demonstrations and other kind of protests and things. Will that fit under Vancouver Island Vegan Association? Will that be a different thing? Or is it difficult because you have to have, like, you're going to have charity status? Or
yeah, so we will be registering as a nonprofit organization. And so, you know, we are going to keep a distinction between the work we do in animal activism and advocacy and the work we do for our vegan outreach, and such as the Vegan Mentor Program or the Vegan Support Circle and such. You know, we see veganism as a, you know, an activist activity in itself, but we also see in terms of the promotion of it that when we do a lot of the activities with the Critical Cat, and the Critical Cat will maintain as an organization at this point, that doing those kind of activities, of course, the upcoming Bacon Alooza protest is a big event we have going and such. And it's, you know, we don't want, in some ways, those events to frame veganism as a whole, for, the people that, of course, we're, meeting at these events, right? Because first of all, you know, as at a lot of the protests we do, whether it's against Canada Goose being sold at Capital Iron, whether it's the horse-drawn carriages, or whether it's the Bacon and Loser Fest. I mean, all the people on the front line with us aren't necessarily vegan. And so it's important that we recognize that, you know, animal activism is not just a vegan activity necessarily, although that may be, you know, sort of the motivation behind it in many cases. And similarly that, you know, veganism is its own type of activism in itself, and that there's an opportunity to engage with people at a different level through focusing just on what, on the benefits of veganism to not only, you know, our personal and personal health, but also to, for environmental reasons, for social reasons, and beyond.
Jordan, I just have a critique on that. When you say that veganism for like personal health is like something that you're promoting, don't you feel that that takes away the primary reason that people should consider veganism, or takes away the autonomy of the animals in the story?
No, we definitely feel that, you know, the ethical reasons for us are the primary focus behind veganism and the reason why we're promoting the Vancouver Island Vegan Association. And what I meant by saying that is that there's opportunities there to engage people at different levels where they're coming from, and it's an opportunity to educate them about the animal liberation, animal activist advocacy movement itself. So if somebody comes to us and says, hey, I'm really interested in veganism, but I'm not really interested in the, you know, animal activist aspect of it, then we can still engage with them in that way, and they don't have to feel like they have to be a frontline activist just to get involved with a vegan community. But through that engagement with the vegan community, they're going to be exposed to other people who are activists, who are animal advocates and liberationists. And so we want there to be that engagement with people from different, you know, sections of that community, instead of the lines being very clear.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying that, Jordan. So you've already mentioned a couple. You said something about a vegan support circle and a vegan mentorship program. And I was just wondering if there are any other types of activities and events that will be, I guess, organized by the Vancouver Island Vegan Association that people can expect to see, like film screenings or potlucks, etc. Like, what's going to happen? What are the types of activities and events?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's going to be, you know, as much as we can pack in, I think, we definitely have, you know, I think the film screenings are, I'm sure, will be a big part of it. Potlucks are already a big part, and those will kind of be carrying over from what we've been doing with the Critical Cat. So we just had Easter, kind of an Easter-themed community vegan potluck, which was a great success. You know, we've done Thanks Living, and we've done Vegmas, and we're going to keep that going and have more community potlucks to get more people out. I think we're going to try to engage with local businesses to get them to get more vegan items on their menus, and to also make them more accessible to people who are already vegan. So what we've been doing is Vegans Night Out, where we go and approach local restaurants and say, hey, you know, we've got, you know, maybe 40, 50 people who want to come out for a night of dining. If you, you know, create us a vegan menu, we can bring you this many people on maybe one of your, you know, quieter nights or whatever it is. You know, so far we've had the first one we put on at a restaurant called Skinny Tato. It's a Polish restaurant here in town, and we took over the whole place. The owner made a special vegan menu for us, and she said, you know, just because of that event, she's going to keep the vegan menu on there all the time now, and, you know, as long as, you know, people keep coming in and ordering off it. So to us, that's, you know, a great way of integrating veganism more into the community, and, you know, getting it out there on people's menus and as an option for them to enjoy when they're out dining and such.
Awesome.
Thanks, Jordan. It sounds like you have so much going on, so many plans. I'm sure, yeah, your schedule will be very busy. So people can get in touch with Vancouver Island Vegan Association, or VIVA, to learn more. It's all should be online, at least on Facebook now. And so best wishes to you and to Corey and to whomever else is involved. Yeah, best wishes. Thanks for talking with us today.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Hi there. So as you've heard earlier from Alyssa, from Amir, and from Jackie, we are doing our annual membership drive. So please donate to keep Co-op Radio alive. And, you know, I personally really appreciate, I've only just recently gotten involved with Animal Voices. So I guess with Co-op Radio through Animal Voices. And I mean, for me, it's really amazing how they really promote marginalized voices. So as a person of color, not just a person of color, but a person of color advocating for animals, you know, we're kind of among the, you know, most of the marginalized, the most marginalized within the movement, within the animal advocacy movement.
Totally.
Yeah, and I think it's great that, you know, people like Cynthia and Amir and I are given these opportunities. So yeah, keep Co-op Radio alive, keep Animal Voices alive, and that's, you know, one way to keep marginalized the voices alive.
And donate to keep Darren's voice on the air, because I love hearing it.
Thanks. Yeah. So once again, please call 604-684-8494 and join the Co-op Radio community.
Thank you so much. Yeah, you can become a member of Co-op Radio for any amount. That's pretty awesome. I think I do $10 a month.
I do five.
I think, yeah. I do five a month, actually. Never mind. Yeah, so five a month. You get a tax certificate for it at the end of the year. Get to pat yourself on the back. And we're all keeping Co-op Radio alive together. And that's how it's got to be done. Grassroots. So thanks for listening. That was Animal Voices. This, of course, is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, broadcasting live from Wall Street on unceded Coast Salish territories, as we do every week. You can keep in touch with us. Shoot us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your feedback. We want to know what you'd like to hear more of on the show, what your thoughts are. We really appreciate that, of course. And stay tuned, well, for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. That's coming up next, one of my favorite Co-op Radio shows. And next week on Animal Voices, it's April 18th. Is that your show, Jackie?
No.
Allison has a show. I'm sure it's going to be good. And I think that's about it. Remember to be kind to animals. Going to leave you with that song again called Tearing Up Zoo by Chumbawamba. It's one of my faves. Enjoy. See you next week.